Okay. Hello, this is Kurt Weller. I had trouble over at Blog Talk Radio again with episode 3001 featuring Kurt Weller and Bob Dobbs. We're at the scam website that Bob uses now, and he's probably going to get charged like $35,000 for this conference call, but we've got special guest Greg Duffel here, and he's going to tell us about his mother.
Welcome. Hello, everybody. I haven't been involved in any radio broadcasting in the last over a year and a half since I got removed from a Toronto radio station for reasons we may discuss later. But
and you're still not involved, Greg. This isn't it's not radio, unfortunately.
What do I do? Oh, this isn't radio? I know. Nothing's radio. Radio doesn't exist anymore.
You've been upgraded. Yeah, you've been upgraded. You were knocked off the radio because it didn't exist to get to a new medium, this internet world.
Medium. If you can do this on freeconferencecall.com, and I'm not getting paid to say this. Bob says, you know, there was this crisis about Kurt's show. Originally, it was supposed to happen in a very orderly manner. Bob phoned me right on time at 5:55, so I had 5 minutes to get together. He's very considerate. But I learn past six that Kurt is unable to do his program using normal means that he does. However, that works on some Blogspot thing. So we're all bummed out about the idea, some more than others, about whether we could do the show. And Bob gets this brilliant idea, of course inspired by Ion, as we all know. And he says, hey, I'd use this thing called freeconferencecall.com. We can all get on. But I don't think you can do it from Canada, Greg. It won't work from Canada. And I go, okay. So I'm I'm going to be the odd man out as usual. So anyway, he gives all the instructions, phone into this thing. I manage to get through. I'm convinced that it's a toll call. I don't know how it isn't a toll call phoning this area code, but I'm old-fashioned, right? We'll get to that in a minute. So anyway, it all happens really easily. We're all on together doing this program or whatever it is. I mean, it's really just a glorified telephone call.
It's a program. It's a program.
It's a program. All right, it's a program. I'll take your word for it, Kurt. So when I hear from other people that it's a program, I'll believe it. So anyway,
we'll get it up there.
Okay, that's okay. I don't really need the exposure, but then I started to think about. I said, Bob, there's got to be a catch here. So I go online because I'm sitting by my computer, and I go to freeconferencecall.com. And of course, what does Google present automatically in its choices? Freeconferencecall.com scam. So I go, oh boy, here we go. I'm involved in a scam. So I go and try and find what the scam is with freeconferencecall.com. What do I find? Everybody's saying, oh, it's great. Bob's talking to me on the phone at the same time as I'm looking for scams. He's saying, Greg, we use this all the time. We're talking with people from all over the world. But you could be on this for days. You could go on drugs. Go on cocaine or whatever and be on this thing for weeks and weeks and just talk like mad. And so he didn't really say that. I brought that out. That's to make it a little more entertaining. And so I'm still convinced it's a scam, but it's working. I mean, Kurt's there, Bob's there. And then I told Bob, you know, my mother is, she's 80-some-odd years old, and I'm helping her with her banking. And it is torture because my mother's idea of doing banking is always to go to the bank, even though I'm helping her online. We live thousands of miles apart, but I'm helping her online with it, and I can create accounts for her, move money around. But it's all very mysterious to my mother, and she's always worried about what it is. And I always attribute it to her age. I always attribute it to the fact that from her sensibilities that things like this just didn't happen back in the 1960s with banking. It isn't her experience with banking. So she doesn't use an ATM card. She always has to go down to the teller, doing things, even at 83, where she's going outside and falling down on her face sometimes and injuring herself, no matter what. She's got to get to that bank and get real money. And even though she doesn't need to, she's got a credit card, which amazingly she uses now. But then I started thinking, I'm exactly the same way with this freeconferencecall.com. Bob's saying to me, there's got to be a scam. And Bob's going, no, Greg, It's and so Bob, so I'm like the 83-year-old woman, and Bob is
yeah.
well, you're whatever. I don't know. You're the 255-year-old.
I'm 5 years older than your mother. I'm 88.
Yeah. So I just thought, you know, we're all victims of whatever system we've been introduced to, and whenever it changes, we're very suspicious, which is probably a good thing, but it sort of slowed down the process here a little bit. But we're on the air and or on the phone or whatever we are.
Yeah, Greg, it didn't slow you down. You know, Kurt, he hasn't done this for a year and a half, but he is talking just like he's on CKLN. He's got the story, stretching it out, filling up airtime. He's actually got into CKLN mode here.
Embellishing it. Hey, I'm in such CKLN mode here, but I just want to – you're right, Bob. I'm in total CKLN mode, and only Ion would know that I've actually got transitions ready here in case – you know, we go to a commercial for something like, listen to this.
You have stuff to play. It's great.
Play.
That's good.
Wow. The
computer's running really slowly. There. See?
Good.
We transition. Musical transition. I can do another one. Hey, do you want to? This is a.
Well, let's transition over to Kurt. Over to
this
Kurt.
Is, yeah, this is a, here, I'm going
to transition
over
to
Kurt.
Kurt.
I'm going to transition to it with a 5-second thing. Okay, here it goes. Kurt.
Okay. Well, I'm calling in on Skype because I don't trust it. I don't want my camera.
But
yeah,
Skype is free.
Yeah, I'll be the only one involved in the scam. I'm sure Bob is getting paid out of this, right? Bob's getting money through the back end. It's like, I con people into saying that this thing is totally free and not a scam, and somehow there's going to be a check delivered to Bob that I'm somehow paying for. I know it.
Bob's probably the one who got Blog Talk Radio to screw me out of the show, too.
I did
Bob
that?
Bob probably owns that free conference called .com or has some invested in it, and he probably just bought Blog Talk Radio and is using it to take a fall so he can get all the traffic from that to free conference called .com.
I know. He's constantly scheming, that man. I know it, but we can never prove it.
And I never lose. I win every move I make.
Right.
I mean, it's he's I'm going to do what's called a segue.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, go right ahead.
Well, she's like a metaphysical Gordon Gekko.
Okay.
Because I just went and saw Wall Street today for the second time.
Oh, great.
That's it.
Yes.
That's all I got.
That's all you've got? I saw a premiere pictures in New York of Michael Douglas, and he shot the film who knows when, right, in the last year or something. And, of course, he's dying of cancer, it would appear.
Right.
Of esophageal cancer or something. He's stage 4. Sounds pretty serious to me.
Hmm.
But he's saying, I'll get through this somehow. But I saw pictures, and, of course, you see him in the movie, and everybody's on death watch. And that's really
everybody is.
Yeah, I think so. Everybody's going, he'll pull through, sure. That's what they said about Michael Landon.
And Patrick Swayze, too.
Remember Michael Landon appeared on Johnny Carson? Literally days before he died. He looked fine. He looked fine.
Hey,
and you go, he's joking, everything.
Kurt, you're in with someone. Greg Duffel knows as much pop culture bullshit as you do. I can't even remember. Was he the Waltons, Michael Landon, the Waltons?
No, he was Little House on the Prairie, and then before that he was the hunk on Bonanza.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, to finish the trilogy, he was in Stairway to Heaven.
Stairway to Heaven or whatever. Highway to Heaven.
Highway
to Heaven, not the Led Zeppelin tune. Highway to Heaven. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, he went on the Highway to Heaven, all right.
So you can't do a segue to Gekko? You were just joking?
No, I just did the fucking segue, dude.
How was it? How was the movie?
What?
Yeah, how was the segue?
how was it?
How was the movie?
Yeah, how was the movie?
Yeah, it was great.
Well, why couldn't we hear it?
Why can't you hear what?
The segue.
I said you're the metaphysical Gordon Gekko. That's the character.
Oh, okay. In other words, that's Michael Douglas soon. He'll be doing that. Not available.
What?
You got...
No, I just mentioned Gordon Gekko, and then my segue was I went and saw Wall Street.
Oh, just saying it. I thought you were going to play a clip. Okay, I saw Wall Street. That's about 1986. I remember that was a good movie. What do you say about it?
About what?
The movie, Wall Street.
I love it, man. I've always been a huge fan of Wall Street.
Well,
and
I
love the sequel, too. I thought it was a rocking good time.
Well, tell us a bit about what happened in the first Wall Street. I don't remember right now.
Well, Gordon Gekko is like this real power broker guy, and he...
I know. He's a raider, a corporate raider.
Yep, and he gets put away for insider trading, basically. That's the thing. And then the sequel is, it's like, you know, 25 years later, and he gets out of jail, and this kid, Shia LaBeouf, is going to marry his daughter. And then that's the basic premise of the flick.
Well, okay, it's based on Michael Milliken, who goes to jail and comes out and has a lot of benefits to help poor people or something. Is that what Gekko does in the second movie?
Well, he writes a book, and he kind of tries to rebuild his empire.
Does it work?
Well, I'm not going to ruin the movie for you, Bob, or Greg.
Well,
you know,
my response
Ion
would be...
Don't worry, Ion will ruin the movie for him, for Bob.
That's right.
Eventually.
My response would be that there's nothing that a movie can do that I already don't know and can do better. So now, don't tell me about what's going to happen on Fringe, because we're writing that. Fringe is the writers are using, so I don't want to know about that. But something like a movie that I'm not involved in, you can tell me what happened, because it'll be wrong. It'll be a wrong ending. So it won't upset me. So what happens to him?
Well, yeah, I have to be responsible to my other listeners here, Bob.
Oh, okay. All right.
Who is this Shia LaBeouf? That's what I want to know. Who is he, and why is he, and where did he come from? He seems particularly unspectacular to me. Kurt?
He comes from, I think his mom, ran a head shop in California, or Los Angeles or something, and I don't know. He just kind of started acting.
He was in those Transformers movies, wasn't he?
Yeah, and before that, I think he was on some, kids' movies.
Oh, yeah.
How do you spell his name?
LeBeouf, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I watch, again, speaking of my mother, rip comparisons to my mother, I'm 30 years her junior, but... Now I'm getting to the point where people come on Saturday Night Live every week who are the guest hosts, and I haven't a clue who they are. And
yeah,
I'm not the wiser when it's over. I don't know who they are, why they're significant. It isn't obvious to me during the program, I don't go, they're particularly talented. They're just these people.
Yeah, it's happening. Yeah, it's happening to me slowly, too, I've noticed.
Yeah, he was born on June 11th, 1986.
June 11th, 1986. So
he's 24.
So he was actually, he was born the year that Wall Street came out.
Yeah.
The original.
There you go. The linkings are starting to happen.
And speaking of Shia LaBeouf, and it's Megan Fox, who was in the Transformers movies with him. I mean, I understand why, when she shows up, I understand why she's famous. Because she looks beautiful. You know, in her own sort of way. But him, I mean, I saw him on Conan O'Brien. I'm going, who the hell is he? And why is he hanging out with that gorgeous Megan Fox in a movie at all? It just doesn't connect for me.
It's hard.
I'm missing something. I mean, in the old days, we had Rock Hudson, right? I mean, we understood why he was there, kind of. It was only later that we started questioning.
Okay, well, I've told Greg about Jessica Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
Jessica Lucas, if you're on your computer, check her out. Mm. Canadian actress, the daughter of Butchie Lucas, who is Butchie Lucas. Doesn't matter who. You'll find out. The Butchie Lucas is in the 1969 diary entry in Android Meme's Xenocrony. So Butchie and his wife came over here this past weekend, and I spent the day at the Grand Wilaya with Butchie and his wife, and they were on their way after they spent 10 days on the Big Island. They were here for 4 days, then in Maui. Then they went over the Big Island. They are going to L.A., and they're going to spend time with Jessica on her newest movie.
She, I'm looking at pictures of her right now.
Yeah.
She is we've gone through this before, haven't we, Bob, a while back.
Yeah, you wanted to interview her.
She is fantastic. I mean, this girl is really good looking.
Yeah.
And what kind of racial situation brought about this particular incarnation? Is it her mother black or?
No, her mother is mother's a white woman, grew up in Peterborough, Ontario.
Yeah.
And Butchie Lucas is a full-blooded black Canadian who grew up in Nova Scotia. And
well,
they met.
There should be more kind of unions like this to create such beautiful women as I see as she is. If that is the secret behind it all.
Right. Now, are you looking at it, Kurt? Can you Google right where you are?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Jessica Lucas. And
I haven't seen Cloverfield.
Yeah, now I watched it last week. Just so that I would be up on what – I didn't know. I thought maybe she might even be dropping in. I didn't know who was coming over here. And so Carol and I watched it, and it's a J.J. Abrams thing. And as a result of an Abrams movie, everybody gets killed. That happened in Lost, probably going to happen in Fringe. He tends to kill everybody off. But in Cloverfield, one person survives.
And it's her.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, she survived.
She survived. Well, I would certainly hope that if there were a whole
he
bunch of people
got
killed.
He couldn't kill her off. She was too beautiful. He just couldn't do it.
I know. You can't do that.
Yeah.
She is. She really is a very nice-looking girl.
Is that you, Greg?
Okay.
Is that
no,
you with music?
No, that weird thing came on. When I don't know. Forget it.
What do you mean weird thing? Something in your world?
One of the websites when I was looking for Jessica.
Oh, okay. All right.
Enters and makes music.
Yeah, so it was very interesting discussing. I don't want to violate any privacy, but I think this would be okay. Jessica is she's in like four sitcoms and a comedy. She's working with Martin Lawrence right now, I think, and she's in is there something called Friends with Benefits? I'm not sure, but she was in Beverly 10292, whatever that is. You know, Beverly, the school thing.
90210.
Yeah, and what's the Baywatch, something like Baywatch, but has another name. But she's been in a lot of the series the past couple of years. She started when she was a teenager. I mean, she's been done everything and been around a long time, but she's not a megastar yet. But she is very agile, can do comedy, singing, everything. So she's all over on, you could call it, the one level below superstar Oscar winner. And she's appearing in all kinds of things, and everybody likes her because she's good. And so she's thinking up a strategy about what happens when she gets to the superstar level. And I won't go into that, but it's very interesting to meet someone who's thinking, who's anticipating the effects of what will happen. You know, total media ecology.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I got to hand it to her for that.
Yeah, she's pretty smart. And, you know, Butchie told me a lot about basically she says the crew works harder than anybody. They have to work 18 hours, tear the stuff down, go home, sleep for 2 hours, then come back at 4 in the morning and set the stuff up wherever it's going to be. And then the actors come in at 5:30 in the morning, but they're there at 4. They stay long after the actors have gone and do what they have to do and then go home. They get no time to really have another life. So she
Yeah, they may not get any time to have another life, but they get overtime.
Okay, and maybe they only get gigs. They do this for a week or two, and then they take 3 weeks off. Maybe it's something like that. But
well,
she said,
these are – this is out in Hollywood?
Yeah, but Hollywood is everywhere. Wherever the films are, you know, wherever the crew
now,
is,
these people are getting paid big, big money, right? I mean, not as big as the
great
producers and all that.
If you had
but
to
it's
do
a,
that,
it's a tough slog, I admit to you.
Right. If you had to do that, you know, for
it's brutal.
Six months, it wouldn't be worth it. But
it's
I can
brutal.
Keep doing it for 2 weeks. You take 2 weeks off, and then you have another gig. You know, that's the way to do it.
It's brutal.
But she said,
you know, if there was a lot of responsibility attached to it, I mean, other than just showing up. It'd be brutal.
Right. And they got to get it right. Now, here's the important point. She says you do not want to piss off the crew because they will film you at the wrong angle. They'll sabotage everything. And she's seen many prima donnas get nailed by these guys, but she's really cool about it and everybody loves her. And when Butchie and his wife show up at the filming places where she's on set, they come up and Butchie told me, he says, "We knew you'd be lovely people because your daughter's so lovely, or a great person, or a nice person." She gives a good billing for them because she's so great.
She's in Melrose Place, Bob.
Yeah, Melrose
Place. I don't
know
whether she's in 90210, but she's in Melrose Place. I don't know if there's any difference between the two of them, but she stars. Who's Jessica Lucas? Who stars with Ashley Simpson in the new Melrose Place?
Right.
She is.
And
she's heavily photographed, and no wonder. But I got to stop looking. I'm just going away from this page now because it's too much for me.
Yeah. And Sparking when I told, hey Kurt, when Greg had a radio show a couple of years ago, he saw Jessica and he immediately wanted to interview her, and I set it up with Butchie, but then Greg got kicked off the radio, so it didn't happen.
Yeah, that would have been a great interview.
Yeah,
Bob,
maybe.
I thought you got him kicked off.
Yes.
Oh,
Ion
got me kicked off.
That's right. Well, what's the difference, Greg? What's the difference between me and Ion? I mean, Ion says I created it.
And Ion made Shia LaBeouf a star.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, Greg,
can I
tell you somebody? Greg, what do you think of this Ion development?
Well, I think it's... it's something that one might expect, but I think that it's a little bit like, I'm going to use an analogy here. It'll be a strange one. I went to see George Clinton, who is the Parliament Funkadelic guy.
Yeah.
And I'm a big fan of funk music, surprisingly, anybody who would see me visually. And I went to see George Clinton, and I've seen him a couple of times. And George Clinton, I guess, was in his 60s, and what he does, he's just kind of a ringmaster. He just brings a bunch of people out. They do things. There's a singer, and George Clinton just kind of conducts or stands there and taps his foot or walks around and says a few things, but it's just his presence there is enough to say it's George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic or whatever. He doesn't really do that much anymore. And I think Bob is trying to move into that position. I think what he's doing is he knows that somehow he'll bring a bunch of people to some radio experiment, yet he doesn't really want to put out the kind of energy that he did before. And also, he spread very thinly. Before, Bob used to be on only once in a while. Now, I think Bob spends most of his time in quasi-radio environment. And he is talking with literally everybody. And there's only so much energy someone can have. And so I think he's on this show, and this Jace Martinez, whatever the hell he does, I can't figure it out. I mean, but Bob is supposed to be on there doing something, and Bob's gone, I'm so busy doing other things. He's found this Ion guy, and Ion starts to become the star of the show. And Bob's going, "Listen to that Ion. He's doing this. He's doing that. Ion is God. He's moving things from one place to another on the planet Earth. He can shuffle cards. And he's not even in the room. Ion can do everything. And Bob will have private conversations with me, telling me about the wonderful things that Ion can do. And I just go, all right. What can I say? It's not impacting my life. And sometimes I'll say to him, Bob, can Ion do something for me? Can he go in and fix things? Can he twist around things to my benefit? Just even if you went to him and said, look, Ion, I don't know whether Ion has any respect for Bob or wants to help Bob in any way. It seems more like an adversarial relationship at this point with Ion and Bob. It's like I was watching these old Superman episodes from the 60s, the animated ones. I mean, I'm looking at those and thinking they're good now. Everything's gone so bad. And there's this character called the Prankster. And I haven't even watched the episode, but I'm thinking, Prankster? With Superman? I mean, wouldn't Superman just use his X-ray vision and burn him up? But it looks like Bob has Ion as his personal prankster. And it's a very strange relationship. And from whenever I have listened to his radio program, Bob seems to do very little now. He just lets Ion do everything. And James Martinez is stupefied, I think. He hasn't bargained in for this. I think originally thought, I'm going to have Bob on the air, and I think that will work. I think he thought that was a good thing. And then Bob really threw Martinez a curveball and brought this Ion in. And he's like Ion is kind of like a Truman Capote-like character. You imagine him there. I imagine, doesn't he sound like Truman Capote to you?
He does. Yeah, he does. He has that little bit of Truman Capote, yes.
Yeah,
and,
that's good.
So that's my impression of it all. I don't know what to think of it, but I can tell you I don't think about it too much.
So how much are you down? How much are you down?
Pardon?
In your Ion readings.
How much am I?
In for.
I haven't read much of it at all.
Yeah, so
have I done it? Have you done a reading? No, I'm sorry. Are you asking? Has he done a reading for me?
Yeah, yeah.
No. Oh, no.
Oh,
no,
see, that's
how think of it.
That's how Ion would work for you. If you gave your $100, then you'd start having Ion help you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Has he given you a reading, Kurt?
For free on the show.
Yeah?
Yeah, and what happened?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Go on, Kurt. That girl was amazed. It was a unique show. Kurt wanted Ion back.
Oh, I always want Ion back, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was
but
a good show, though.
It was a good show, Greg. This girl was already on. Young girl. We don't know how she found us. Young woman. I think she had some children. And she was criticizing what we were saying, even though she had no clue. And I got the notion, I want to bring Ion on in the middle of this. So I called. I get off and call JW. I say, hey, can you come on? Well, where are we going? And I tell him, and he says, oh, okay, sort of reluctantly. So he comes in. Then we bring Ion through JW, and he starts interacting with the girl, and it changes the girl's life right there.
How do we know he's changed her life?
She said, after 15 minutes, remember that, Kurt? Like, she doesn't know voice is. She doesn't know who the voice is. The voice is just a wise southern cracker that's talking away about everything. And she starts saying, well, I guess I can ask this guy some questions. So she does, and Ion explains stuff. And about 15 minutes into it, she goes, my God, I think this is the most important conversation I'll ever have in my life. That's what she yelled out.
Well, I think we'd have to know a little bit more about her at the present time to know whether it really changed her life.
Okay, so what happened?
I think it was Carolyn. I think it was Carolyn.
Is that her name?
No, your wife.
No, Carolyn wasn't on. What happened is that I immediately, once Ion was going to stay on and talk, I posted on the private Ion, forum. I said, anybody watch this, come on over here and call in. So Tina and Sheila called in, these women. They called in and buttered it up with Ion, and she, the young woman, was just listening to this and interacted a little bit, but it became a group thing, and everybody was participating. Kurt was just amazed, just sitting back. And then at the end, the girl says, well, I do feel liberated, but I hope I don't end up in jail.
That's right. She did say
Bob,
that.
Can you, just for people who are listening to this, and I can't believe anybody's going to listen to this, but including me.
Including Greg.
Can you just summarize, if you can, what purpose Ion serves or what it's supposed to do, or just summarize his his raison d'etre. Like, why do you have him there, and why is he there?
Ion is what was prophesied in all the religions, any religion. In Christian religion, the second coming, this is the establishment of the New Jerusalem. It's the greatest event in human history, and that's what Ion is. That's the summary of it. Now, fill in the detail. A little too high bar I set there, isn't it?
Well, that's okay. At least it's something.
That's what it is. It's the second coming. You know, the very first radio show that Ion did, May 1st, 2009, on the Rumor Mill News show, which is Ray Ann Allen, she had heard, the reason we got on there, she had heard of the Evergreens and Cosmic Awareness when I was on the week before with James. James was featured, and I was a guest. And I said, you know about the Evergreens and Cosmic Awareness? Yeah, well, I got something new. So I told her, well, bring them on next week. Now, he had been on Cashflow 2 weeks before, and we call it he, but it's an it, whatever Ion is. He'd been on Cashflow as a human being named Ian, but now he comes on as Ion. And in the second, probably third hour, some guy calls in because Ion's building up this impressive array of verbality. And a guy calls up and says, you know, in Aztec culture, Incan culture, they had this god, and I don't think it was Quetzalcoatl, but it was some kind of god. It isn't Quetzalcoatl, some other weird name. And he says, that god said that they were going to come back at some point. It has been a big prophecy for that religion, that Inca, Mayan culture, whatever it is. And so the guy just says, are you that god? And Ion quietly says, yes.
You know, if somebody asked me that, I'd probably
say yes
too.
You'd say yes. Okay.
Why not? It'd be negative to say no.
Bob, ask me if I'm that guy.
Are you Quetzalcoatl?
No, I'm not, Bob.
Kurt, you're so negative.
He always has been. What? That's his charm.
That proves it.
Yeah, Kurt's on a race to the bottom. But the thing is that
Do you find, Bob, that Ion takes a lot of airtime away from you? Do you just basically during the Martinez show now, instead of actually having to provide anything, you're just sitting around listening to him, right? And maybe commenting about how brilliant Ion is.
No.
What I do on my show.
That's what you do, Kurt. Yeah, that's what Kurt does. As Ion is to Bob, as Greg sets it up, Bob is to Kurt. But it's not the case because I go on and start the show, and I've got to come up with some ridiculous conundrum to get Ion going. And then everybody starts emailing in questions, so I don't have to do much once that's happened. And we've got a backlog of stuff. But I do have a thought or two myself that I want to inject, but I'm really glad that Ion carries the ball. And
what does James Martinez do? I can understand that. But then what is James Martinez's role?
Well, it's his show, Cashflow. He does it three times a week.
Shouldn't he relinquish it to the two of you? Shouldn't he just say, look, I'm useless on the show. I'm not doing anything. I'm not providing anything.
No, he is.
I'm
he
just
does
facilitating
a
it in some way. I'll just move away and become a listener.
No, he does a technical thing. He's coming in from L.A. The station is in South Dakota. And he comes in, and he's on Skype, and he does something that's required. Now, I also get to see the emails, but he does something extra. So he's necessary technically. And he does Tuesday and Thursday, generally, and they're very battling against the beast shows, you know, helping people in dire straits. He actually believes that the long-term thing is has to have a good attitude and to have an upward solution thing and ascending and all this good stuff. And he totally agrees with having Ion in the mix of his two other shows. He agrees with that. He wants an Ionic kind of thing. But
he
now
must think Wednesdays
Ion
are really slow.
What?
He must think Wednesdays are really slow.
No. He people are in a very negative space when they come to him. And he gets them out of debt. Yeah. But he says you will fall back into debt if you don't have a different attitude about yourself. And it's sort of new agey, but it's just normal build up your self-esteem. But he loves Ion. He now introduces Ion as the greatest paramedium around today. He's become very impressed with Ion, and you can't help but be impressed. And so he likes that he's got the best inspirational voice around, and that's Ion. So it totally fits his agenda. That's why.
I hope he does a sequel to that book, and like In Cold Sweat or something like that. That'd be good.
What book?
Huh?
Oh, you mean it's not a sequel to James, but you mean In Cold Blood, In Cold Sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
No, no, well, okay, Truman Capote did the first one, if you don't know.
Hello, hello everybody. I'm Truman Capote.
I got the reference.
Yeah.
I got the reference.
Yeah, I didn't want to hammer it home too much.
Yeah, okay.
I like to leave a few things out there for the audience to mull over in case they don't get it.
Listen, on Achieve Radio, James's show is the top show in the ratings. But if he didn't have Wednesday's eye on, he wouldn't be miles ahead of everybody. He'd only just be a little bit ahead. This is what Bill, the owner, told me. That
Ion puts James over the top. You've always brought the wacky factor to radio. And of course, that is the most interesting thing that you could bring.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't even matter whether you're wacky or not. If you can bring the wacky factor, if you can attract the wacky factor, you've got a show. And the more genuine the wacky factor is, the better your show is.
Yep. We are considered by regular listeners the best show in the universe. And it is the best show when you actually hear what goes on. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, and the thing is, I don't know how are they able to determine that it's the best show in the universe? Shouldn't Ion be the only person that can determine that?
No, Ion's non-physical. It is. No, it doesn't care. Ion is not interested.
But he can monitor the universe. I mean, how could Ion monitor the universe?
He could objectively prove whether or not it's the greatest show in the universe. So.
He does. We have thousands of listeners. Many of them are in parallel worlds. Okay, we're intergalactic now. And Ion says this on the show. He said there are 250,000 vampires in L.A. He can analyze any level of weird phenomenon, he can tell you. There are 250,000 vampires just in L.A. alone.
Wow.
What can I say?
What can I say? Did that just happen? I used to live out in Los Angeles. Did that just happen recently that there are vampires?
Vlad the Impaler did start the vampire thing because Ion says human beings can have anything they want. So this guy decided that he would stay in the flesh and be immortal in the flesh and made blood the medium of keeping him going. And this is just a crude outline.
He started biting people.
Crude,
I have to admit.
Yeah, he started biting people.
Oh,
and
God.
He was legendary. When you went to his castle, there were like these torture racks all over, you know, a mile before you got to the castle. You know, he just killed millions of people as a lord or whatever he was, a count. So, but he's been biting people. He's presently living in Budapest. Vlad the Impaler, 400 years old, lives in Budapest, still biting people, getting recruits, making people immortal. And that's just that topic. Look, we did the whole Brittany Murphy with Kurt, and that triggered the fake death scenario.
That was amazing. That did change my life. That was great. That was an amazing show.
Yeah. You want to go, Greg, ask him about it.
No, I won't. He'll have to tell me.
You're doing a Ben Watson.
What? What'd you say, Greg?
Dom asked me to ask you about it. I said, no, I won't. I said, he'll have to tell me about it. I'm not going to ask to be told.
See, that Greg is a very shallow investigative journalist. I mean, he looked in the conference call, read one little email about someone saying it was a scam, read the other one, and said, okay, that's all right. He doesn't go too deep. He checked everything out.
I just didn't have time, and then Jessica Lucas came up, and I couldn't take my eyes off her. All part of your scheme, I'm sure, Bob. To take
Greg is very
mind
happy.
Off free conference call.
That's
com.
Right. It's subliminal MKUltra. But Greg, he'll have opinions, investigate something for 10 seconds, solid conclusion, and he won't do any more research. Like here is.
Hey, you know what I saw? Something of interest to me today that I saw. I was at Cabell Farms, which is an Afghan food and restaurant store here in Toronto.
Yeah.
And they have a big screen TV there now, and it has BBC News on it, or had BBC News. And evidently there's big news about Kim Jong-il. They had a whole, the whole first 5 minutes, it was about, or 5 or 10 minutes, was about President Kim and his son, and that his sister has been made a general, and there's lots of fantastic things going over there in the DPRK. I mean, very exciting. We're going to have we're going to have a new leader there. President Kim's going to pass the torch to his young son.
You see, Kurt, Kim Jong-il, whatever his name is, he's Greg's ion.
Yeah, that's a guy I would love to do a show with. Kim Jong-il. It's beneath him to do it, I know. I totally accept that. But as you should think, it should be beneath you to be with Ion if you think so highly of him. You
no,
say,
I'm not.
Oh, no,
I don't
Ion.
Have inferiority.
I can't possibly be involved with you. You're too far. You're far too great.
I'm not inferior. I don't have inferiority complex
please,
like you.
Please, Ion, create someone else that would be more fitting to be on the radio with you. And while you're at it, get rid of James Martinez.
No.
I'd interview this Kim Jong-il guy. What the hell?
You have?
No,
I said you would.
I don't feel beneath him. I feel, I don't know.
Oh no! I would love to be involved with Kim Jong Il in some way. But
I have a feeling he's probably got a delicate ego.
Who?
Kim Jong Il.
You think President Kim has a delicate ego?
Yeah.
You mean a hard ego?
I think he's a very sensitive person too. Really, very sensitive, artistic person. I agree with you.
And his feet. He's in his feet.
Yeah. And did you see this Larry King interview with Ahmadinejad this past week?
No.
When Ahmadinejad was in
New York
for the UN.
Tell us about it. Tell
idiocy.
Us about it.
It was really a fantastic hour of television, and it was made more fantastic because I happened. And the only reason I actually saw it was because I was down at Cabell Farms with all these Muslims. And I was eating food with my girlfriend, Catherine. I was eating food down there. She was just, she says, I can't do dinner. I just can't. I'm too tired. It's too late. I'll take you down to Cabell Farms. Of course, I go, great. I love going to Cabell Farms. It's very, very working class. It's very, very basic, good food. Very healthy, I think, you know, relatively. So for eating out at a restaurant. So we went down there, and it was around 9, and Larry King was on. And who's on but Ahmadinejad? I turned to Catherine, and I said, is this a repeat? I seem to remember Larry King doing this before. Is he repeating things because he's going to be gone soon? It's like the best of Larry King. But no, I'd lost track of current events, and I didn't. Our prime minister's in New York at the UN. I wasn't even thinking about it. I don't even care
right.
about it. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
So anyway, Larry's there, and of course we all know he's Jewish, right? And works in the media, the big media, and there he is with Ahmadinejad, the man who is projected as being the biggest anti-Semite in the world by the U.S. media and by Larry King. And it was just nonstop Larry King making out that Ahmadinejad is being unreasonable or he's doing the wrong thing or he's making the poor Israelis, the Israeli government, he's making them nervous, so nervous that they're going to come and bomb him. And Ahmadinejad was very, very good through the whole interview. He's just excellent. He very calm and logical. He just
yeah.
Larry King would say something like,
emotional thing.
Yeah, shouldn't you be placating Israel? Shouldn't you be making them feel better about you? Because if you don't make them feel better about you, then they're going to come and bomb you. You know, you say you don't have nuclear weapons, but they think you do. So if you just say that you don't or make concessions to them, then they won't come and bomb you. And then so that opened
up.
Are you doing
Larry King or Jimmy Durante?
I don't know.
Close enough, Greg. Close enough.
Cha-cha-cha-cha. So Ahmadinejad, so there's a delay. When Larry says something, Ahmadinejad has to assimilate how idiotic it is, I think, first. And then, of course, the translation has to come through. So there's this long pause where he's reflecting on it. And then he just tears the logic, the illogic of Larry King's ideas to pieces. But he did put out a very harsh view of Netanyahu. He called him a war criminal. He killed women and children and so on and so forth, which is probably true. And I just was very impressed by Ahmadinejad. Again, I thought that his thoughts, his presence, his the ideas and logic that he put forward were unlike anything that we hear from certainly our domestic and American politicians.
Yeah, that's right.
It's very good. I'd recommend anybody to go and watch this thing. But then again, and of course, I'm in this room with Muslims generally from all over the.
Are they paying rigid attention, rapt attention?
Oh yes. The guy. I'm the only. Catherine and I are the only white people, or what would appear, appear to be Christian people, or whatever,
yeah.
in the room.
Right.
And or we would be perceived, I guess, as being Christian people, even though I am not. But
I'm proud of it.
But I don't wear anything to say that I'm not a Christian. So unlike Christians who wear crosses and such, I don't wear something that immediately indicates that that I have no particular religion and don't follow anything. But that I'm actually eating with Muslims suggests something, but. Then again, I'm not wearing a little thing on my head, and I'm not wearing any garb, and I'm not praying. I'm in at odd times, when they should be praying to Mecca. So they know I'm not. It must be very confusing for them to a certain extent, but they treat me extremely well. I have to say they're very magnanimous, and there's absolutely no hostility at all, it's a very friendly atmosphere at this place.
Well,
and,
Greg, I do own that cafe, so they're going to treat
you
well.
Well, good. So they're very nice. Everybody who's there is very, very nice, at least has been to me. So anyway, the guy who was serving us, who's a young fella, he was interested, and then other people started coming in off the street, specifically just to watch Ahmadinejad.
They
weren't even eating
eat?
Anything. What?
They just sat.
They didn't even, though they were standing.
Right.
And they weren't even eating. They were just standing by a sort of a shelf there and leaning on it and watching them. And of course, I'm doing more reaction than they are because, there were some things that just struck me as being extremely funny. The kind of logical positions he took and how he, just how he positioned everything was humorous. Humorous against his adversaries. And Larry King, and Larry King is constantly when something interesting seems like it's going to happen, really interesting, or things are going to develop, Larry's always cutting to a commercial. He's always got to go to get paid. Well, we're running out of time, or I've got
to
go to commercial.
Running to get paid. I like that phrase.
What?
Running to get paid. He has to be paid every 20, 15 minutes.
Yeah,
he's running to get paid.
He said, and he asked Ahmadinejad about how you think we're ever going to have peace in the Middle East? It's just a ludicrous question. Do you think we're ever going to have peace there? Is it ever going to happen? With people like you there? And if we only had the whole place filled with Jews, everything would be fine. So Ahmadinejad starts musing about things and talking about the general situation. And Larry goes, well, I guess we won't solve that tonight. and then Ahmadinejad talked about Israel, the formation of Israel. And so he started interviewing Larry King. Ahmadinejad says, why is Israel there? Well, good question, right?
Yeah. Goes,
the president or whatever. Well, it's because
the terrible
down. Hardships that the Jewish people went through during the Holocaust. and so Ahmadinejad goes, so because. And who did this? Gave them this terrible treatment. Who did this to them? And he goes, well, it was done by the Nazis, and so after the war, because they'd gone through such terrible strife, then they were given their own homeland. And we get it. Dad goes, yes, but whose place was this? Who decided that they were going to be given this particular location? And he goes, well, and of course Larry couldn't answer that one. And Abedin says, you know, a lot of people were killed in Iran during the war. You know, there were 1 million people killed. A lot of suffering went on. We said, are you telling me that if any group of people suffer, that they can somehow demand land in some other area to go and reside in, to take over a particular place and own it because they went through a certain hardship? Surely there are other hardships going on all over the world. You know, it just went on and on like that with Ahmadinejad. That's busting through all of these ridiculous ideas that we're supposed to just blithely accept that there is, you know, that there should be an Israel, as if there's been an Israel forever. and that the Palestinian people have to somehow barter to get back what they had.
Greg, you were accused of being an anti-Semite on International Connection for 8 years. Here you are back talking about Israel again. You brought us down to the level of International Connection, Greg.
Feel free to cut it out. Feel free to remove that
same
section.
Show.
Any section
same
you wish.
Show as always was, every Sunday morning.
Yeah, I know. It's why they had to remove us.
You didn't talk about Israel too much later after the moron man, you know, set up a detente. But the thing is, your first couple of years, you guys went on about it a lot, and you were labeled as anti-Semitic, right?
Well, you know, I think I've you're right. You're right. And I think that the reason that I talked about it in the earlier days more was that no one else was actually talking about it. In fact, one of the other broadcasters, who is an idiot at this station, whose name I won't mention, but he said his initials are Nor, you know, N-O-R. Nor. So ignore. So he said to me, you know, he said, you can't talk about that. And I'm going, why can't I talk about that? And he said,
and he told me that. He told me and Bob Marshall that in 1985, the very same thing.
They're going to come after you.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think I was being particularly outrageous. I was just talking about what I knew to be the case, and you know what? There was no real backlash. If anything, we had callers, rare ones, who would phone in and disagree with us about or have a different opinion than we had. I mean, my opinion was generally that I don't believe in the two-state solution, as they say it. What Clinton, all of the Western leaders, two-state solution, I don't believe in it. I think there should be a one-state solution where there's law and people are people, and if they want to go off and do Jewish things, let them do it. If they want to go off and do Muslim things, let them do that too, you know, or Islamic, or Christian, or whatever they want to do. I mean, I'm not a big proponent of religion, but if it was up to me, if I ran a country, I'd outlaw it harshly. Mm. But the thing is that, that's not the way things go. And maybe it has to be done gradually, but if that is even the case. But so I was putting forward the idea of a one-state solution, because in Canada, we're constantly told, as I think people are told in the United States, but more so here in Canada, that about the value of multiculturalism, how we're all supposed to get along here, how it's a tremendous benefit that we're all going to, of wherever we come from, whether we be Jews or Muslims or Christians or whatever we are, or none, no religion, that somehow we can all get along here. Well, all right, I'll buy into the idea of it. I don't know whether it's practical, but I'll buy into the idea of it. They're putting it forward, but when it gets on the international arena, they're out there saying that no, in Israel, oh, no, it can't be that way. You know, we have to separate these people. They cause such problems together that we have to separate them. Well, that's ridiculous. Jews and Jews and Arabs, and they lived together there in that region for long periods of time. And there wasn't, I don't think there was any particular, I mean, animosity, maybe, distrust.
Yeah, they were
possibly,
more,
but
they were multicultural before there was a Canada.
That's true. It's so this is a disgrace what's going on over there. And of course, it's all, you know, the Jewish people and the Muslims, who knows, the most radical of these groups are all trying to say, no, we can't countenance the other. Well, that's not the way the world works, is it? I mean, if I could
right.
cancel out people, I'd like it to be maybe
you
a much better world for me. But
what I like is what McLuhan said in the 50s. He told the UN, which was just getting off the ground, you idiots are putting transistor radios in the Middle East. You're going to cause incredible tribal inflammation, war, and violence. He predicted
Absolutely.
Because they put the fucking radio in there.
Hitler was a radio man.
Yeah. And you're just going to replay what happened to Europe in the Middle East. Nobody
Hitler
knew what he
was a radio man. Hey, have I got that clip? Hey, let me go and find.
Yeah,
let's you keep talking
that.
There, Bob. I'm going to try and find
yeah.
that clip.
But to get around the sectarian positional endless discourse that can't be resolved, Kurt, is you bring in the medium that stirred it up.
No, I told him. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
You see what radio does? It takes Palestinians and Jews and other cultures that are there. All of a sudden, they're hearing a Palestinian voice in their home, and that's a little too shocking for a non-industrialized tribal culture. You know what I mean? It's not all separated with big cities and factories and locked into industry. It's a 19th, 18th century culture, and they believe in their religions. They haven't been mutated by the technologies like the West. So you actually start doing another tribe's voice in your neighborhood. That gets them all riled up. It happened in French in Quebec. When the CBC came in the early 50s, the French Canadians started hearing English Canadian voices in their home. There was no French available.
That must
Maybe there was pretty quickly.
Disturbing.
What?
That must have been tremendously disturbing.
And that led to the separatist movement, René Lévesque and the FLQ. But it's obvious. No one really – it'd be pretty hard. But at least you would use that as the cause rather than getting into this interpersonal, intercultural, my religion is better than your gods are fake, you know. That's irrelevant.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, so did you find it, Greg?
What? No,
did
I found
find
Super
it?
Chicken, though. Super Chicken agrees with you. There you go. That's Super Chicken. He agrees.
What is the date? This is an important date. Now, it's September 27th. The International Connection is back on the air. It's actually the anniversary, the 33rd anniversary of the Battle of the Harvest Moon.
Really?
September 27th,
really?
1977. That's good. 33rd, Freemasonic. It's a good number.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, Dr. Beter talked about the Battle of the Harvest Moon in September 77. You don't know that story?
No, vaguely. I don't know. I listened to that thing, you know. For
that
thing. I research like Greg does. I do the 5-minute, you know,
yeah,
and I make
five
my
minutes.
Decision.
Well, in September 27, the Russians, with their Cosmospheres, blew up the Rockefeller moon base and took over the moon, and therefore were in charge of planet Earth with their particle laser beams aimed at the planet. And that big upset happened on September 27, 1977. You'll see it on one of my charts, the Battle of the Harvest Moon. Happened today, 33 years ago. And then all the Rockefellers died. David Nelson was found dead in January 79. His brother, John III, was found dead 6 months earlier, July 78, on the Rockefeller estate. David Rockefeller wasn't killed, but he was removed from whatever Chase Manhattan was at that phase. Maybe it was Chase Manhattan. And Lawrence Rockefeller was, deindustrialized. He started supporting William Irwin Thompson and the New Age movement. So the Rockefellers were really weakened right after that.
Huh.
And who took over the Pentagon? Strange sounding Russian names in the first Reagan era. Bolshevik.
I have no idea. I don't
know. No, I'm just telling you. Bolshevik
oh,
guy
okay.
took over the
oh,
Pentagon.
Okay.
And then Dr. Beter and I revealed this in September 17th, 1982, when the Pentagon Bolsheviks were going to nuke the new alignment between the Rockefellers and the Moscow Christians. And we stopped that. That's in the memo to Prince Charles. We stopped that battle. And nuclear war one, it would have been. That was September 17th, 1982. So we're the month of September is a good month. So James, or James, I think I'm on cash flow. Yeah, because I'm in the cash flow position. Greg is being eye on here and carrying the content burden. So, Greg, did you find the gecko or whatever we're looking for? Hitler? Hitler is a raider bet?
Thank you
did
for
you find?
Do you hear those clips when I play them?
No, do it again.
Not really?
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, really? Oh, they sound pretty loud. I got to turn it up, I guess.
Yeah.
Pregnant pause.
Thank you for listening.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. That was George
yes.
Bush. Sorry. McLuhan, when... Oh, here it is. Here's McLuhan.
When things happen very quickly, there's very little time to adjust to new situations at the speed of light. There's very little time to get accustomed to anything.
Yeah, see?
See, he sounds like me.
Yeah. Very difficult.
Now, Bob, you sound a little more spaz than he does.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little more hectic and hyper.
Hey, listen, okay.
Yeah,
I don't know what, I can't remember what this is, all right? I'm going to play you something. This is an intro, one of our intros to a commercial, all right?
Okay.
That we did for the show. This is over 2 years ago. I have no idea. I see what it talks about, but I don't remember it all. Here it is. I prepared this, but it involves McLuhan.
We're into it. I think it's now we're playing backwards. We're going back into the bicameral mind, which is tribal, collective, without any individual consciousness.
Ooh, is this crazy nut?
There. You
probably
don't hear that.
No,
did
I heard
make
it.
That he, out?
Yes, he said we're going back into the bicameral mind, tribal mm-hmm. mind, and that's referring to Julian Jaynes' book, The Origins of the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. And the breakdown of the bicameral mind was the beginning of the phonetic alphabet and literacy in Greece. Now we go back to the bicameral mind. That's what he's saying, electrically.
We are replaying the international
yep.
connection here today, aren't we? That was from May 4th, 2008.
Daniel's going to be pissed. Daniel's going to be pissed. He was not part of the new season.
I wonder what we did the previous week. There's all kinds of, it's amazing how much work I put into this show, you know.
I know, play a few more, they're cool. I play some more McLuhan stuff. I think that would be
I'm having trouble finding the McLuhan stuff. Let me here's some of them are so short, you know, they
have you got a file folder with all this stuff? Is that what you're
yeah,
looking
yeah,
at?
I put in an old disc. I kept all of the clips and so on that I would do every week, and let me just
it's funny when you say the McLuhan, I think that's the Mike McManus show. He was talking like that in the late 70s, and one of the major interviews was Mike McManus on TV Ontario.
Well, here's one.
The point that you're absolutely right, kids don't understand satire.
Kids don't understand satire. They just don't understand it.
Well, that's not true, is it? Because the kids are more and more ironic because they have to process so many media images. They don't like satire about them, maybe. They do satire on their parents and everything else and constantly.
Here's Lou Dobbs.
Communist China? That's right. We call it Communist China here because China is communist.
That's a good one. That's a good
one. We call it communist because it actually is communist.
It is communist. We don't just call it communist because it used to be called communist China. We call it communist China because it is communist China.
Yeah, that's a special case. We call other people not what they are.
Let's see. What's this one?
Isn't this great?
Oh,
Kurt's there in the George Clinton position, just letting his prodigies run the show.
Yeah. I hope. Do you have anybody to answer to, Kurt, about any of this? Will you hear from anybody about this? Will you hear, You know, that was a really terrible show, I listened to the whole thing, but it really was awful. Are you gonna get any feedback like that from anyone?
Never. No one ever listens to this. My buddy Greg will listen to, like, maybe half of one, if I may.
Hold on a second. I'm being summoned. I'm going to disappear for a second. You carry on for a moment,
okay.
And I'll be back. I know this is unorthodox, everybody, for a show, but I have done it before with Bob, where I actually went home and let Bob
for 45
continue on with my
minutes.
Show on the phone for half
yeah.
an hour.
I just start reading old LaRouche stuff. So, Kurt,
all right.
Let's do
Bob,
our bit.
How you doing, man?
Very good.
What?
Yeah, we're kind of been hijacked, eh? Like, it's Greg's show now. But No, it's good. But what were we talking about last time that maybe we were going to pick up on?
Oh, it was a while ago. I don't even remember.
Have you finished? What's been your... Okay, you like all that Buzz Coast and YouTube stuff?
Man, I haven't had time to check that stuff out.
Okay.
I've been a mover and shaker lately.
You mean you've been going to open mic auditions?
Nah, I've just been, taking care of business.
Well, what is that? You mean surviving?
What?
You mean surviving?
Yes. Working, selling,
hustling,
you know.
Producing. Making records.
I am impressive. The Buzz Coastin, that dude never stops. I don't know how he does it.
He has nothing else to do. He just sits there in Beijing and scans. He says he can slap together a YouTube. He just takes the latest stuff that I did, finds what he likes, sticks it in there, the audio, and then he scans. He's really good at finding, you know, interesting footage. And he just slaps the footage he finds, and it's actually done too quickly, I would say. It's actually a sloppy process, but he can do it fast.
Yeah, I'm blown away by that because I don't know. If I try to edit something together like that, it takes me like hours and hours.
You're too picky. I'm pointing out that he's pretty casual about it. He relies on accidental imprecision to create neat effects, which he finds that do happen.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense, but it's still really good stuff. I mean,
he's doing it like we talk, the way we do our shows, where we just start come on with no agenda and then start talking and interesting patterns come out of it. That's exactly how he slaps together stuff. And he has all kinds of resources to get all kinds of variety of footage, just like I got all kinds of memories about different themes that I can tap into. You know what I mean? Rapidly.
Right.
So you bring up anything,
cool.
I can respond. Yeah, he's like us. And then secret
have
is
you ever
the...
met him? Have you ever met him in the chemical body?
No, I would have met him in the summer of 2009 or December 2008. See, he was in Europe for a year or so. He was based in Hawaii. He went to Europe when I got involved with him, and then he ended up in Georgia at a spiritual camp on the way back to Hawaii. But when he went to Hawaii, he went to the island Kauai. I've never been to Kauai, and that's sort of like the less developed album, the less developed ion, or Jesus, great. Less developed.
You just say
less
the less developed ion?
Yeah, he's the less developed ion. He's the less developed island. Kauai is the less developed island. Anyways, he dropped in there in December 2008 for a few weeks, and he was trying to get – he'd be at the main little town of Kauai, and he has to get a boat to the wilderness part where he had lived. You know, he just lived out there in nice beaches or something, quite far removed from any electricity. And he'd gotten there too late, so the waves were too big, and nobody would risk taking the boat and his stuff along the coast a little bit up to where he wanted to go. So he was stranded there. There was nothing happening. He wasn't going to wait there for 5 months, so he went to Bangkok.
And then
he traveled around for a couple months in Thailand, Bangkok, Bali, everywhere. And then he met this Chinese woman from Beijing. So she invited him to Beijing. He went there, and that would be early 2009, maybe. April 22nd, 2009, so a year and a half ago. And he never left. He's still with her.
That's pretty cool.
Who's
yeah.
that?
Buzz Kosten, who makes the YouTubes.
Oh, yeah, him. Where is
yeah.
he now?
Beijing. And if you go to his travel log, he has a travel site. If I can, I'll send it to you. Really great footage of, you know, China's landscape, the cities, the development is incredible. He just gets on a train and drives along and films what you're passing by, and you get to have a – he goes to markets. He went to this store that had been there in Beijing for 500 years.
Wow.
So he has good travelogue. That's another channel he has. And remember, he had 1,000 YouTubes on there, and Google or YouTube, whoever ran the thing, knocked them all off, killed them.
Why?
Because one little YouTube had a fragment of Richard Feynman, the famous physicist, speaking at Caltech or Stanford, one of those places, and that big university objected to this Buzz guy using one little fragment, so they complained to Google.
How did they find it?
Oh, people, I don't know, people, oh, someone probably was out to get Buzz. Because he had a pretty good reputation. He had a lot of followers, and they liked his YouTubes, and he built up a lot of stuff for a couple of years. And the old Slack guys found out about it. They might have triggered off, told somebody. But he'd already been complained about a couple times before, and they shut down different YouTubes. When he did one on alt Slack, they got pissed off and complained, and they censored him for 2 weeks. So he was always being hassled. But we don't know who complained about the Richard Feynman. But they didn't delete that YouTube. They deleted all four channels and 1,000 YouTubes, including 500 of ones that I was on. And he had to rebuild all that.
Boy, what a blow.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, but he's rebuilt it all, and he's found most of mine, and Monsquaz is putting him on over at Five Bodies so they couldn't be knocked out again.
Oh.
But he has a great travel log, and you go to his, you know, a lot of the stuff is back up. You know, he recovered it all. You just create another channel with a different name. Okay?
How was the show when I was gone? Did it get better?
Yeah, we got back. Didn't get better. We just got reoriented to what we remembered we were doing last time we were on and trying to figure out what we would do if we wanted to resume the themes, and we didn't come up with any, so then Buzz came up. Oh, I had sent him all the Buzz stuff, and I want to know what he thought of it.
That's baloney.
What'd you say?
That's baloney.
That's
baloney?
Is that what, is that what that is?
That's Greg.
That's baloney?
That's bull. That's bull.
We are rapidly going to be decapitated here now. Gray's got his finger on the dial. He's got his old chops back. Didn't take long. So,
Greg, where do you get the radio? Do you go to radio school?
Me?
Yeah.
No, of course not. No, I never.
Like
why
a,
are you being are you being facetious or?
No, I'll explain it. He went on there. Here it is, Kurt. He went on in 2000, took over the International Connection from Wayne Morris in 2000, April maybe 23rd or something, and he played fair. Fair, what's that? Fair? Was that what they're called, Greg? Fair?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
fairness
he just played
and accuracy
fucking,
and reporting.
Yeah, so he played clips. I don't think he even did much talking. Then he brings on Daniel a year and a half or so later. And then he has to talk to somebody, so that loosens up the dependence on fair. And then they started gradually learning how to make this little sound effect. And then it just evolved till it became pretty competent, you know, by 2004 or so. Right, Greg?
Well, Daniel, I mean, what happened was that
Daniel's technical expertise.
I might have gone into this with in the referring back to your website, the what is it called? I thought of it today. I'm going blank on what your website.
Oh, my website?
Yeah.
Oh,
Plaza of the Mind.
Yeah.
What? Sorry?
Plaza of the Mind.
Plaza of the Mind, of course.
Yeah.
Article that the interview you did with me online that we wrote.
Yeah.
Basically, what happened was I went to CKLN, and because Wayne Morris, who has a history with Bob, was leaving the program, and I was a listener. And I have to admit that by that point, I wasn't too impressed a listener. I mean, I was pining for the Bob days. But even when Bob or the Bob Marshall did the International Connection, it was really just playing Mabe Russell, which was great, and Dave Emery and all that. At the time, that was fantastic because there was no other way you could hear that stuff. We didn't have the internet. There was no way of knowing how you could even get that stuff. So, it was difficult. So having that kind of material played was very liberating. But by the year 2000, things were developing on the internet. You were able to listen to online radio stations increasingly. But I went to CKLN really because I thought, well, if Wayne's leaving and no one will carry on the tradition of the program, it'll disappear. So I thought, well, it does have a certain value, even if it's playing these American liberal half-hour programs about the media. They were interesting enough, I guess. So I thought, well, all I have to do is go down, get on my bicycle, go down, you know, a 10-minute ride down the road, if that, go in, shove a couple of CDs in there, and walk out. Well, nothing is that easy, right? You get involved in it, and you go into CKLN, and it's like they're ambitious about radio, or ambitious about politics or something. I don't even think they're ambitious about radio. And so I started to record more things. I got a mini disc recorder, and I knew Daniel at this point, but Daniel was going to university, and I knew him because of protesting against NATO. I knew one of his aunt, a Yugoslav woman. And so we were, so I knew Daniel, and that year in 2000, I happened to mention when I was at his parents' place, I said, I'm doing this radio show. And he goes, really? I guess he was about 19 years old or 19 or 20 years old. And he goes, oh, really? Well, he just immediately started saying, oh, you should get a website and you should take calls and you should do this and you should do that. And I go, whoa, wait a minute. I said, I'm already putting 8 hours a week into this program as it is right now. That would be a full-time job. Well, Daniel went off to school, and then the next year in 2001, he phoned me up and he says, oh, can I come down and watch you do the show? And I said, well, why don't you come down and be on the program for a week? So he says, okay. So I put him on. He was my guest. And then at the end, after that was over, I said, well, that went fairly well. I said, do you want to come in next week to make this a regular thing? So that's how it got going with Daniel. But Daniel hated when it went to fair, you know, when I said, oh, well, now we're going to play fair. And, you know, the fairness and accuracy in reporting, he hated that. He thought he saw a lot of the cliches that had developed at CKLN and about radio in general. And he just more and more he convinced me to do more of our thing, to speak our minds about things. And I was very resistant at first. I said, well, you know, I don't know whether the show is really like about that. I don't know whether that's the history of the program. You know, I was being very reverent to what the International Connection was, whether when Bob Marshall was doing it or when Wayne was doing it. But eventually I broke down, I guess, and we started to do the show, and we introduced more clips and recordings, and we just got more and more ambitious. We would do skits and write things, and it became more of a political satire program than anything, and that's really when the trouble started.
Right. Now, Greg, let me say this. Was Daniel a computer geek that early?
Absolutely. His mother worked for IBM. This is a guy who was involved with computers at a very, very young age. You've got to remember, when I got involved with CKLN in 2000, I didn't know what an MP3 was. I had no idea. And,
right.
And it was all very mysterious to me how you could do what was being done, how you could send a whole program over the Internet. I remember going to the Summit of the Americas in 2001, and they were talking about broadcasting from up there and doing a show. And I said, well, how are you going to get the show from Quebec City to Toronto? And they said, we're going to do it over the Internet. And I went, well, yeah, I guess my experience with doing things over the Internet was, you know, half the time it didn't work, that something would go wrong. So I didn't really understand what was going on, admittedly. And I mean, I knew it was possible, but In fact, one of the International Connection shows was done from the Summit of the Americas over an existing setup that they had there to transmit over the Internet, and they picked it up in Toronto. And it was, you know, there were many glitches in it, evidently. On the other end, it would clip out, and, you know, it was really the problem at CKLN's end. They're just hopelessly untechnological. You know, it just wasn't properly done.
Greg, it was because of Dan's computer savviness that you could start doing the sound bites, and that he really made that happen faster than you would have. Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was a period of time. See, Daniel was going to school from at least 2000.
And what school was that? What school was that?
University of Western Ontario. He was going to university between 2000, at very least, if that was his first year, until 2003. So, except during the summer and rare times when Daniel would be back in town, I did the show on my own. So, but by that time, I had computers set up, and I'd learned enough that I could equip myself fairly well, and I knew how to do things that, you know, a lot of people at CKLN didn't know how to do at all. So
right now, that's, you get up to 2004. It's now fully in the Bush era. You can't believe this nonsense, and you start just being amazed at mainstream Wolf Blitzer kind of stuff, and just taping it and saying, this is crazy what they're doing in the mainstream media. And that's what you really started providing.
Yeah, but, you know, you're looking for content every week. And back in the old days, when I was doing the show, I'd always think, oh, I got to have an interview this week. I got to get somebody with a topic. Well, in many ways, Daniel liberated me from having to think about that, because although we did sometimes do interviews, we got to the point where we knew we could go on the air at 8:30 and we could easily do it till 10:30. We could keep it going. We'd prepare as if you know, the content we had may not fit in it, but we wouldn't have enough. We'd always be insecure, or I would be. But we always had stuff left over. We always had masses of material that we prepared, or I prepared, left over to other weeks, to the point
But now here's the point. You said then the trouble started once you and Danny got going. The trouble started because Danny had such crazy views, and you agree with most of them.
No, I don't think that was part of the problem. Danny?
No, you get on there saying, we are Stalinists. And we support Kim Jong-il, or whatever his name is, you know, and saying that to a politically correct audience, they got all worked up. And then the funny part was the callers calling in complaining about you guys.
Well, I don't think it, you know, I mean, that may be your view of it, but I don't think that's really what happened. I think what we found was we went on saying things that almost no other broadcasters
would dare say.
Took that position. And there was
that's
amazing lack of response. There was, and more often than not, people would be saying, yeah, you're right. I mean, they'd be obsequious to us. Or, sure, occasionally people would phone and say, what are you saying? And then we would work it through logically, how we felt about it. Or we'd be completely over the top. It got to the point that whether that you were a right-winger or a left-winger, you really couldn't tell whether we were joking or, I mean, people didn't know whether we were serious or not, and about whatever topic. Let's say about Kim Jong-il. Now, I'll admit right now, I do respect President Kim. I do. And I love whenever I see things about the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, it's like watching, it's like I look at it and go, it's like if I wanted to go to Disneyland. I'd love to go there.
Okay, but, great. Let me say this.
The
so
thing
Kurt,
is that it didn't work quite the way. I think what you're misrepresenting is
I'm going to say
trouble,
this.
The trouble that happened was because of the people, the few people at CKLN, the politically correct or the NDP grouping, that NDP being New Democratic Party, a sort of a Trotskyist, a quasi-socialist, you know, party, like sort of like the Democratic Party, These people that ran the place, who felt themselves, they positioned themselves like they were activists and anarchists and radical people. But when we went on and started saying that we liked President Kim, or at one point I think I went on and said, I yelled out, "I love you, Saddam," something like that. I mean, that just drove them nuts. Every year there would be a thing where they call Prisoners Justice Day. And one year I took on, and I did it totally, I didn't do it to annoy anybody. It was an idea I had about Prisoners Justice Day, because I thought Noriega, Saddam, and a few other people, world leaders, are in jail. What is their lot like? And Milosevic and so on. They're incarcerated, and nobody ever thinks of them as being prisoners, essentially,
right.
And or that we should have any consideration for them as prisoners. And so I did that. That caused a huge ruckus. Because
okay, great.
Yeah.
Those are good examples. I want to add this point, Kurt. What Greg and Dan end up doing was combining Bob Marshall style and Bob Dobbs, Mike Dyer style, and put the two styles together.
I would agree with that. I don't think that was Daniel's view, because Daniel didn't know.
He didn't know the history.
Bob.
He didn't know
he
the
didn't
history.
Know it. He wasn't influenced by this at all, and didn't want to be.
But it became that way to the degree that they didn't know what Bob Marshall, what position he had, because he had the range, but it was generally a conspiratorial or fringe view. But they didn't know what I was with Mike Dyer. And so to the degree that you guys became uncategorizable, that's what me and Mike were doing. And that part of the Mike Dyer show was what you brought in. Then
the
what
same
you were
backlash,
doing.
And the same backlash occurred inside the radio station. Outside the radio station, there was really no trouble at all. We could go on and say the most – well, I mean, I don't think it's so outrageous, but I mean, we would –
but people liked it. You get all these positive calls coming in during those Sunday mornings.
Really, people loved it. They loved it.
Yeah.
And and what I thought was impressive was that a lot of the people who were, let's say, socialist or left-leaning, normally who you would think would maybe like President Kim because, you know, he's communist – I could tell they didn't, but they were amused that we were taking that position.
Yeah.
Because it was a position that they either couldn't take or wouldn't take, but they were interested that we did, because no one else does. So
they were interested in how you would argue yourself out of what they perceived a ridiculous box you put yourself in. They'd be interested in how you would sort of maintain a plausible acceptability of your logic.
Yeah, they'd say, oh, well, President Kim is this. He does this to his people. And then we'd start saying, well, what happens here? Don't we do the same thing? You know, if you're going to condemn him of doing something, are you just oblivious to the fact that that's going on here in a way, too? It's a different society. And it would also be, how can you tell them how to run their country? You're expecting them to be running things along the lines that you think are right based on your upbringing. Well, you're not from that area of the world. You're not from that culture. And how dare you even say, have a say in what they're doing there? It's this judgmentalism that goes on with all of the various spectrum, if you want to call it, of political thought. It's like, you've got to do it the way that we've done it because we're right. It's unnecessary. You know, you should go. It's a red herring to so you don't concentrate on what you're doing in your own country, what you're doing in your own community. Well, I'm getting too serious.
Yeah, Kurt, what do you have to say about this?
Like just saying stuff. I mean, having an opinion. That was my understanding of what happened when I interviewed Greg, because it was basically like it sounded like your show is actually the most popular there.
I have to say, I mean, obviously, if you're not up at 8:30, between 8:30 and 10:30 on a Sunday morning, you're not going to hear the
show.
But
didn't it bring in the most revenue? I know there was something like that.
Really, we did. As far as a show is concerned, yes. The only other person that even challenged us there was a person who was a DJ, a club DJ, a lesbian club DJ. And a lot of the money that I think she brought to the station was because she had the ability to do some kind of, you know, use a whole club and get the proceeds from booze and all of that to put towards the amount of money that she brought into the station. And frankly, I don't even know, there's no auditing of what went on. I know from our program what we brought in monetarily. I can vouch for every dollar that came in there and where its source was and account for it. As for everybody else, I don't know. That's
right. You know what they did, Kurt? They actually stole some of his stuff they brought in and put it into the other person's account to beef up her account. So they keep her number one and these guys down.
That was why we originally got kicked out of the station. Because we had – the reason that – what really brought it to a head was that we had filed a corruption case with the board of directors. Now, we were naive in many respects because the board of directors was controlled by elements that are corrupt and
Complaining about.
Yeah, they were willing. Those elements, maybe they didn't know about it, but that once they did find out about it, as usual, the whistleblower is the enemy. That's how these are people who will eventually end up in government, and that leads us to a story. Yesterday.
Yeah, Chris Drew. Let's go into that.
I'm here at the house, and I live on a major street in Toronto. So I'm used to noise to a certain extent. But what happened was I heard this loudspeaker all of a sudden from the front of the house. That's pretty unusual. And it said, and we're going through an election here for mayor. And so I hear, and who do you want as your next mayor? You know, I hear this as if somebody's at the front door yelling into the mailbox. But it's not. It's a loudspeaker system. I'm thinking, what the hell is that? And I think it's just temporary, someone with a megaphone. You know, riding through town, you know, with a, I don't know, doing something illegal. So I don't think much of it. I'm busy. I got to do things. I'm doing the dishes, and my girlfriend comes down and says, and she's been very ill the last couple of days. She says, Greg, every time I try to get to sleep here, I hear all this commotion. What's going on? So I go, okay, I'm going to go out and check. So I go to the corner, again, a major intersection in Toronto, and there is a big political rally going on for this scum politician by the name of George Smitherman, who used to be our member of provincial parliament here, and he quit to become mayor of Toronto, to be the king rat, right? So I hate this guy. I think he's a piece of scum, rude, like you wouldn't believe, just a nasty guy. So I'm standing across the street from them, and I just feel compelled to heckle. I have to. I'm standing alone on the street, and I'm interjecting with thoughts when I'm hearing. Like, they'll say, we need George Smitherman as our next mayor. I go, no! and at one point, the guy who took over from him, the liberal who took over from, when I say liberal, I mean literally the Liberal Party. That's what it's called here. And not using the Rush Limbaugh terms, although I may as well. He starts talking about how he's talking to these supposedly talking to immigrants there. Now I don't know how many immigrants are really there, but he's making the case that, well, you know, it'll be your turn next. It was, you know, it was our turn before. This is the subtext, all right, not what he's saying. You know, my mother came from the Ukraine. She didn't have two dimes to rub together. And, you know, now she looks back and she's got grandchildren and we have good jobs and, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, this will be yours one day if you'll just vote for us, right? And so, and as he's going through this story, which incidentally I had heard before about his Ukrainian mother and all that, I just yell out, boring! And so then they send somebody over to distract me, because they weren't so interested in distracting me, but their mayoral candidate was going to start speaking soon. So they send over somebody to distract me, and he starts commenting about how I'm Well, he eventually gets the point that I'm providing the wrong image. And I said, look, I don't care what I have no... He says, you're not promoting your cause by doing what you're doing. First of all, he said to me that no one could hear us over there. And I said, well, why are you here then? If you can't hear me, then why are you here? And then and then he says, you're not doing anything good for your cause. I said, I don't have a cause. I don't have one. I said, my only, if I have a cause, is I just really dislike these people. I think they're liars and cheats. And I'm going to say so here, just as much as they have. They're saying it. Well, they've got a permit. You know, we got a permit for that. I go, I don't care. I don't care. I said, go away. You know, F off. And then he says, then he's trying to tell me what I look like. And he says, you just look like a, you know, you come off as an angry white man. And I go, and I said, so you're commenting about my race somehow, are you? And he says, and then he starts going, oh, well, and he starts saying that he's white. You know, that gives him some reason why he can call me concentrate on the obvious. That I'm a Caucasian, and I'm supposed to now realize that the race stuff I said is supposed to be allowed as long as he's white. And I said, would you say that to me? Would you say I was an angry black man if I was? And he says, well, he says I might. And I go, you fucking racist. I said, get the hell out of here. I said, I'm not interested. You're just a racist. You're bringing my race into this. It's got nothing to do with it. And so, they're all plain clothes, liberal minders that are there. You know, some of them put on they have T-shirts that they put on. They put on the homeless to make it look like they're down with those yeah. people. It's really, really sick what goes on with these people. They're really these liberal NDP socialist Trotskyists. They're just sick people. So then I notice. And it wasn't a complete shock to me, but there is a guy named Chris Drew, and he is a young liberal. And not only is he a young liberal, but he's one of the guys that we sued. He was on the board of directors of CKLN as the RSU representative. And there he is. And I know he's a liberal, and he's always there, involved, heavily involved with the party, promoting the party. Now, there isn't supposed to be – they don't promote – party politics in the mayoral election, but this guy's a liberal, has been, this Smitherman asshole, I can swear, can't I? He's been around for the last 10, 11 years, has no qualifications, other than he's a liar and cheat to be a member of parliament. So he's, and rude, like you wouldn't believe. And so I see this guy who we sued, Chris Drew, and I see him a lot because if I go to an all-candidates meeting, he's there. If I go to the picnic that the MP holds, he's there because he's part of this liberal machine. So I go, hey, Chris. So I start referring to him by name. and of course, you know, this is – because this guy he's training to rip us off in the future. They all are. And so I know he lied. I know that he did things that were wrong in our case. I have the proof of it. I have emails and so on. I know what he did. And it was disgraceful. And he had a position of importance, of responsibility. And that's the big problem in our society. People who have positions of responsibility that do terrible things to other people out of malice. And who are sneaky and underhanded, and he is one of these people. And I'm not going to tolerate it. I'm going to point out that these people are this way. Why shouldn't I? Because they're a danger to society. And so then I see one of my. I'm still on the other side of the street. You know, this guy who came over says, "Why don't you come over on our side of the street? Come over and do it over there." I'm thinking, why would I do that? I'm in a perfect position here. My voice is resonating back on this building and coming right back to the participants. I'm in a perfect location. Why do I want to be over there with unfriendly people? So, and be shouted down and humiliated or something. I've got no interest. So then a friend of mine actually just happened to walk by, a guy who comes by sometimes to visit with me, and a young guy about Daniel's age. And so I was surprised to see him. And so eventually when the speeches are all over, we walk over across the street. And I see Chris Drew again. I said, "Hey, Chris." I said, "Your guy's losing." I said, "How will it be when you're back in a loser?" And so Chris Drew is trying to, he just puts on this perma smile and starts walking away. And then I start saying, "Hey, Chris, what are your feelings about this?" or something like that. Then suddenly, these Sikh people, these turbaned Sikh people, come in front of me like they're his bodyguards.
Right.
And they start protecting him. It was a weird scene. And I won't go into all the crazy things that went on after that, where they're actually blocking me on the street, swarming me, protecting this guy as if he's important to them. he can't be, like he's a celebrity or something, that he can't be addressed, questioned. And, of course, what's interesting about it is when most normal people, when they go to a campaign or campaign meeting, they're focused on the candidate. What Daniel's taught me and what I know through this guy, Chris Drew, is you have to look at the back of the room.
Yeah.
Those are where all the minders are, watching what's going on.
The aide.
They're checking. They're reporting to their higher ups to make sure that this candidate doesn't say anything that might get in the way of business or something. Right? It's interesting. It was really fascinating to watch this yesterday and see all of these plainclothes people standing around, and some of them disappeared really early. They were there, watched what happened, weren't participating really, got into a car and drove off. They're right in front of my house, and I saw them, and they were definitely liberal or some kind of aides. And you can imagine with politicians, let's say they actually got somebody that would start speaking the truth somewhere. Well, that would have to be nipped in the bud, wouldn't it, if they started saying things that were off message. And that's why they're there, to watch it, to check how things are going. But
they're the actual representatives. The candidates
are
fucking flack Lee Harvey Oswald frontman.
They're the ones you want to be talking to. And basically, Drew has outed himself because of his situation with us. And when we sued them and when we got their internal documentation and saw what they were doing and proved that they were being underhanded and sneaky, Drew now, he's a focus of my attention because he's going to have a position in government or wants to have a position there. That's his aspiration. And these Sikh people that were protecting him, I gather that they are people who want political influence, and they've picked, like you would bet on a horse. And that's how this starts, right? That's how these political careers start. They start by some group of people feeling that they can possibly getting some political influence somewhere, and they pick someone low down on the totem pole who has ambition and aspirations, put their money down on him, and hope it goes somewhere. And when somebody like me comes along and says, "Hey, you're unethical," I mean, well, that's why they're backing him, aren't they? Because, you know, he probably
is.
He has been in the past. Why would he change?
Yeah. He showed his colors at CKLN.
Yeah, and exactly. And I have the proof of it. I can show how he had no interest in proper justice, in no interest in protecting against corruption or anything. So that isn't apologetic for it at all. Walks around with the same smug look on his face today as he did then.
Right, and you now have the Supreme Court of Ontario, whatever, agreeing with your complaint, right? Can we talk about that?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, the thing is that case was settled. I mean, our case before wasn't specifically against this one person. He was part of a group of people that were being called to task or called to question
about
what
had
gone on.
And that was the negotiated settlement that brought you back on the radio.
Right. So the courts of justice don't want to rule on things because it would provide precedent, and then then justice would be a lot easier in the world or in societies. They want to make everything nebulous. Everything gets settled, you know. It's so expensive and complicated and convoluted to actually assert your rights in this society. You may as well not have any unless you've got a lot of money.
The corporate society, you can't have a point of view. You can't really go by the point of view. You can't
stand you're seen as a villain when you walk into a court and you say, look, these people aren't doing things properly. You're like, it's like you're wasting everybody's time, you know. It's a sad situation, but it's all we've got.
Okay, so you did that case was get settled, but now you're in a new situation, and the Supreme Court has agreed with your motion and keeping it moved. So
it's not my motion. The thing is that just to make it clear that there is Mary Young, who ran for the board of directors of CKLN back in 2008. Was forcibly removed from her position, as were other people, politically, and removed before their term of office, against the bylaws, which are the laws of the land, when they're ensconced in a corporate bylaw. She was not allowed to know anything about the corporation, and she filed an application saying that it's not a lawsuit as such, it's an application saying that CKLN is not being run properly and that it needs to be brought into proper form and have proper statements and hold proper meetings and follow their bylaws and so on. It seems like a simple request. There's no money involved in it. She's not making a claim where she's owed money from as a result of any damages she's have occurred to her as a result of these untoward activities, but you know they're fighting it. This seemingly small community radio station is fighting any transparency about their finances and have been doing so for the last 10 years. So we have to think that there's, you know, one would think, why would they do that? What would be the purpose of doing that? Surely you just want to be transparent if you could. There must be something more in it. And if it's just sheer defiance, well, I mean, it's a pretty costly way to be defiant. And one can also go in the direction that there could be something very untoward that's been going on the last few years, and it just no one has been able to get to the bottom of it because no one's been able to actually get the documents and so on to examine it. And so Mary Young's case in the Ontario Superior Court, Commercial Court, is trying to do that, and that was launched just under a year ago, and it's still going on. It's in what's in. Mediation, which I won't go into. I know a little bit about what's going on, but it's dragging out for some reason or another, and I'm not sure how fruitful it is. So
well, they thought her application was frivolous, and now the Superior Court says no, it's real. And so,
well, they put forward the idea that it should be dismissed, and it hasn't been. So, in fact, I don't even know whether they put forward officially that it should be dismissed. The key people in the organization were claiming that it was completely frivolous. Well, they've been proven wrong on everything, every pronouncement they've ever made. So there's a cover-up going on, and this is what we knew about back then. But it's a cover-up about a lot of things. And for what reason, I have no idea why people would want to do this, but I can speculate. But it's hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it. But it's at some tremendous cost in terms of energy and money and everything, but it's either that or let people get away with everything all the time just because you just can't be bothered. You know, that people should be allowed to get away with taking over community media organizations and and not having it accessible where it's a closed shop. I didn't think CKLN was like that when I went there, and I don't think it should be that way. And so, but
okay.
Then there's our settlement. Daniel and I were not allowed to go back on the air when the station went back on the air in October. It was off the air up until October 2009. It had been actually off the air for close to 6 or 7 months. It literally sometimes with dead air going on for months at a time. And this is all because of these political shenanigans that were going on that brought the radio station down to the point that it wasn't broadcasting or creating anything. And so our last show was on February 22nd, 2009.
Yes.
And
yep.
And then the idea was that these people who threw Mary Young off the board, amongst other people, who were allied with people like Chris Drew, these elite groups of people that feel that they own the radio station, they got the radio station up and running again, but they made sure that we didn't go back on the air. By creating an absolutely dictatorial and ridiculous set of rules, arbitrary rules about what can be said and what can't be said on the air. And I just refused to sign it. I didn't think it was right. Daniel felt the same way. And we're going, you know, breaking news, if there is any. CQN fought this decision, but we're on the terms of our settlement back in 2007. We're going into binding arbitration, and we'll see what happens. I don't know what it'll be. Whatever the judge decides in it, or what the arbitrator decides in the case, whether it means we go back on the air, I don't know. It could mean other things. It could mean that the arbitrator will say that what the case we brought is no good, and will rule in favor of CKLN. I'm not going to prejudge what's going to happen. I'm not going to predict what's going to happen, but we'll put our case forward and we'll see what happens.
Right. Okay, that's good. So, Kurt, we might have another 10 minutes or so to make it a two-hour show. So you talk for a bit. What do you want to talk about? Or ask Greg or me or yourself, anything.
So, Greg, ultimately your goal is to get back on there then. With the international
Well, I think
connection.
That we will. That is what we will put forward. That we were kept off the air, in a way that was wrong. That other people were brought back to their programs, and we were not. In terms that were highly prejudicial against us. Now, sure, I'd like to go on the air back on and do the program again. But again, it's. It's whatever the arbitrator deems appropriate. But I can tell you that if the arbitrator does not rule that we go back on, or if they rule that we can't go back on the air, whether we win this arbitration or not, I won't ever be on the air on CKLN again, or perhaps anywhere, except on your fine show. we're going to be blackballed.
Yeah, you're
We're
saying
be blackballed.
Right. You're saying that whether or not you won, you would not get back on CKLN.
If the arbitrator said, if we asked to go back on the air as part of our settlement, if this is what we were the terms that we wished that we put forward, and if the arbitrator said, "All right, I'm going to rule that you can go back on the air," well, we'd do it.
Yeah. So, what did you mean to say you'd be blackballed?
Well, if she could rule in our favor, but the terms of the settlement could be not including us going back on the air.
Yeah. Okay.
So if she doesn't rule on it, there is no way that I will ever be on the air in Toronto ever again. It's not possible. There are so many factors against it. In the media landscape, that we were even on the air in the first place was highly remarkable. That we were able to stay on as long as we did was highly remarkable.
Right. So you're saying also, if you wanted to go anywhere else, there's so many graduates of these jerks at CKLN that are in mainstream media that you'd be blocked there too by those people who are.
Well, yeah. We've ruffled a lot of feathers. Let's put it that way. We were anyone who goes on and tells who has an opinion, an honest opinion about things, and is feels free to give it, as I think we were brought up to think that we could, and only the most naive of us, like me, actually think that you can go out and do it. I'm the canary in the coal mine, I guess.
Yeah.
It doesn't really work because people get grudges against you and want to stop you. They want to stop you from saying things because then you might be critical of them. Now, I've never had a problem if someone was critical of me. I mean, no one likes to be criticized, but if it's a rational criticism and you can either accept it. I mean, I've been criticized and accepted and embraced it, as you do often, Bob, right?
Yeah.
The thing is, a lot of the things that people absolutely detest about our show are things that I think are great. So, when people would say we were infantile or sophomoric, I mean, sophomoric in particular, I mean, I thought that was one of the greatest compliments anyone ever gave me, to say I was sophomoric. I've always wanted to be sophomoric. It's a hard thing for me to be sophomoric, so to be awarded that is just terrific. So that's what I intended to do, so at times. And I don't have a problem with it. So other people think it's some kind of a sin. Well, I don't think so. And so, I mean, we should be able to be pretty much whatever we want to be, as long as we're not hurting anybody.
And great, we can be whatever we want to be on this teleconference. You could start telling everybody to come here, and you could have a gathering every week here, more callers than you would normally on your show.
And easier, cost any money.
See how he wraps it up? You see how he wraps it up? That's what I've been waiting for.
Yeah, how's Bob going to wrap this up?
How's he going to get you to work with his free conference call?
How do I take what Greg did? How do I exploit Greg?
I think this is really Bob's scheme or scam. Right?
Yeah.
He's drawing me in again, as he did. See, it's that wretched Bob dragged me into CKLA. It wasn't really Wayne Morris. It was Bob who got me there, right?
Yeah.
And now Bob's dragging me into another thing. Another
a
thing
new
I'll get
medium.
Hooked on. A
that
new
you
medium.
Were very suspicious. You can't believe it. You just can't believe it. You got him for free.
And it'll be at least 30 days before I get my phone bill to see that this is just huge.
This
conversation, but I just can't afford it. But for the next 30 days, I might say, Daniel, listen, we can go on this free conference call .com and wreak havoc, in Radio Land. It'll just be amazing.
And then put it up on your website.
We can record it. An MP3 will be available to us. It'll be incredible.
Yeah, and you put it on your website.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be. We'll go around with a megaphone.
I told you I would save your ass, Greg.
Yeah, you're right, Bob. You're right, Bob.
You just have to wait 30 days till Greg gets his phone bill. That'll be a magic day with this. Not one.
I'm phoning the phone company tomorrow and checking out.
Yeah, do that. I'd like to know, Greg. I mean,
Bob,
bill.
Bob, it seems like you have some kind of thing where you can call anywhere with no charge. Right?
Yeah, we pay here in Maui, maybe it's because it's isolated, for $72, I get TV, internet, and phone for $72 a month, and I have unlimited time.
Yeah, well, you've got a plan. You see, that's why it doesn't cost you anything.
Right.
Now,
No, not the free conference call. That's just that's why I can phone and be on the air talking to all these, Kurt Show and everything. That's the reason for that. But it's got nothing to do with the freeconferencecall.com.
All right, Bob. We'll have to see.
Call him tomorrow. Look, we have cash flow 3 hours on Wednesday, and then there's something called Tailgate, where people go to this kind of number, all from all over the world, Australia, Europe, everywhere, and for 3 or 4 months they interacted with Ion up to 11 hours each session. Nobody got charged.
Do you know what this is like now? Remember those old days where they had continuous run movies?
Yeah.
This is the part where I came in.
Yeah.
Were we talking about this at the beginning? I think we were. It's bookended. Hey, Kurt, this whole thing's bookended. We're good.
Yeah, good.
It has conceptual continuity and consistency. We did know where we started from because we've come back
good.
To it.
We're good. We've done it. We've wrapped it all up nicely, like in a nice little bow.
Yeah.
Nice little bow.
Actually, to be fair, I'm the one who wrapped it up. I buttoned it.
Yes.
Did you? You hit the button.
I buttoned it.
No, I do that. I hit the button.
No, bullshit. I'm the one who, because I brought it back to the freeconference.com. It's in the archive. I buttoned it up.
No, that's good. Have you stopped your part of the recording?
Who?
You, Kurt.
You know, I couldn't get it to work.
Oh, okay. So, see, I'm the only one who can stop it, Greg. I will hit number nine,
and it will
stop.
Number nine.
And then it'll stop recording, but we'll stay on. What'd you say?
Well, actually, I have to get going.
Yeah, I can understand that, Kurt. I can understand why you have to get going. It was really nice. We should do this again with Kurt, maybe.
Yes.
As long as it doesn't cost me a lot.
If you have anything new to say, Greg. If you have anything new to say.
Yeah, maybe we should leave it like that.
We'll have you do the blog talk, and you won't get charged the outrageous fees that go straight to Bob's coffers.
I see you're just as suspicious as Bob as I am. But he's irresistible, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is irresistible.
Drawn like a moth to a flame.
I know, I can't help it. But, you know, Bob himself, you know, he'd say not to trust blindly. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And plus,
listen,
he's a guy who killed Kennedy and shit. He created AIDS. I'm going to trust this guy?
Hey, listen, speaking of blindly following something, can I leave you with something that I saw today that I just thought was tragic but absolutely ridiculous?
Before you do, Greg,
yeah.
I want to have a little backup. We have a monitor here. Carolyn, explain this free conference call stuff.
It's free.
Okay.
Wait a minute, Carolyn.
Dr. Carolyn Deed, M-D-N-D.
Is she there? Is Carolyn there? Yep. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Carolyn?
Yes, she can.
Yes, very good show, Greg. You
supported
yourself very nicely.
Thank you very much. Now, just explain this to me. If I'm dialing from Canada, the 1-712 number, et cetera, how is it that it's not going to be a toll call for me?
Dude, it's going to be a toll call.
They have international calling numbers, so hopefully Bob gave you the right one.
Oh, no, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
I don't think he did.
So, yeah, we have clients from all over the world that call in, and they've never complained.
But here's the thing. The Canadian aspect.
Greg, don't you see that Bob, he's ruined your life. I mean, like, he destroyed your radio show, and now he's destroying your phone call.
Yeah. I know. I think let down the road to ruin.
Yeah,
man.
Bob's destroyed
really
my
am.
Life too. He made me end up in Maui, and you know, here I am in paradise. I'm so pissed.
Yeah,
but
coming.
There is no Canadian number on the list of international numbers, so you may get nailed. But I don't know. I think it would block you, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's all right, Bob.
You may get nailed, but that's okay. Greg.
It's been a pleasure.
Send
you the bill. Yeah.
Yeah, send me the bill. We'll pay for it.
Okay.
We'll pay you. Right. Me and Kurt will split
it. Can I tell you my little story that I saw?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Kurt heard that.
He meant me and Carolyn.
Yeah. I meant Carolyn and me. We'll split it.
I read the most, just to finish off today, I read the most ridiculous story I've ever heard. You know this Segway thing that people ride around on? This thing with wheels and you know the guy who bought the company rode a Segway right off a cliff and died?
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. In England. He was riding around a Segway and rode right off a cliff.
Wow. Now what is a Segway?
It's like those things, they look like furniture dollies, but they're motorized. You stand on the back.
He rode it right off a, 62 years old, rode it right off a cliff, right into some water and died.
And he just
bought
the company.
And he bought the company. What?
Did he leave a note? Was it like a, was he
trying
to?
No, it was an accident. It looks like it was an accident. Yeah. I mean, isn't that crazy? Imagine dying by running off a cliff in a Segway, and you own the company. I mean, that's bad for business.
Yeah, that's right. But Ion says every death is suicide. So he was just following his fastest path to his joy. He just wanted to make the most absurd news story ever.
It really is.
It's performance art.
Anyway, that's my final story. I really, I need to go too now.
We've been so much like, it's so great to bring back the International Connection mood, Greg and Daniel version, because that's what we just heard. Greg mouthing off about his pet beefs and his anti-Semitism and some absurd news stories, just like International Connection. I hope Kirk can find it.
No topic, just carry on.
Yeah, just, but all relevant and very up-to-date with that Chris Drew. That's a riveting story because it goes right into what the series I'm watching, The Wire, they're emphasizing the mayoral race in this fourth season, third and fourth season, and that's exactly what they show in The Wire, and a very good TV show.
Yeah, it's just, the whole political system is just ridiculous.
Yeah. That's right.
All right,
but,
gentlemen.
Well, wasn't that profound of me, huh?
No, yeah, the profound part is
really
out,
knows.
Hey, Greg, the profound part is what I'll add, and that absurdity is what creates wealth. Because if you didn't have that absurdity stuck in everybody's face, they wouldn't be able to blog or write movies about.
We'd be far less well off.
That's right. We wouldn't have any wealth caused by the information critique, which is in the books, movies, magazines, is endless critique of the idiot George Bush syndrome.
There'd be no freeconferencecall.com. That's for damn sure.
That's right. Wouldn't have been enough money.
Yeah, and as he says, as the aforementioned person says, said.
Who?
Oh, wait a minute.
The aforementioned said, which, you mean ignore?
That's baloney.
Oh, yeah, baloney, right. Yeah.
Sorry.
A fitting ending. Okay, so Kurt, you'll sign off, and then I'll hit number 9.
All right, take it easy.
Hold
Greg.
On just before you do, Bob. One last thing,
Greg?
Okay?
Yeah?
One last thing, okay.
I like you. I like you. You're the real deal.
I hear Kurt say that every week. That's very appropriate.
What do I say every week?
You go, I like you.
So this is it. This is what you say every week, Kurt.
I like you. I like you. You're the real deal.
Yeah, there we go.
That was Kurt. It actually was Kurt.
You could be Vice President of the United States, Kurt. Imagine.
Hey, that's what... What do you think I'm doing?
Yep.
That's right.
You're working your way up.
It's the trickle-down effect.
He's the Chris Drew of Dobbstown.
Exactly.
Boy, this has been a really long show, huh?
2 hours.
Fuck yes,
yeah.
It has.
And a bit. Okay. Okay, we'll talk to you later. Right. Bye.
Okay. Okay. Hey, Greg, wait a minute. Wait, don't say goodbye. Listen to this. I do the Star 9. Listen and see what you hear. Okay. Just a second.